The easiest answer is to race a lot. The more you race, the more you'll get comfortable with it. I think you still have to do hours to train for crit. It's not like you can ride 10 hours a week. And if it feels good and you're comfortable, that helps with the being relaxed and all of that. Whereas if not every corner, if you try to ride 25.
How would you describe the Belgian crack of death? Hey everybody, and welcome to the Castelli podcast. I'm really excited to have Luke Lampadi on the show. You guys have definitely seen his name in the news, in the States and in Europe. In recent seasons, Luke has become one of the most thought after young riders due to his long list of victories and impressive potential in sprints and one day races. At only 21 years of age, Luke has made a big career step into the World Tour after three seasons with Trinity Racing and has a remarkable palmarès for his age, including becoming the youngest US Pro Crit champion, a race he won three times back to back. Stage winner at the Giro Next Gen, Tour of Japan, Tour de Bretagne, Tour of Taiwan, and the list goes on and on. This interview with Luke was recorded in January and before the Americans settled into life in the World Tour, notching up three second places and a third place since turning pro with Soudal Quickstep at the start of the year. And after finishing seventh in a reduced bond sprint at Kuurne-Brussel-Kuurne and his monument debut at Milan-San Remo, the voyage of discovery continued for the 20-year-old with a proper run at some big couple classics like Brugge de Panne and then getting more intense with Gent-Wevelgem and Dwarsdorf Vlaanderen this week. For most riders, their spring classic debut can be something of a baptism of fire. Harsh conditions, bad luck, and a little in the way of experience can quickly unravel a new pro's best intentions. But Luke Lampadi isn't your typical first-year pro. So without further delay, let's welcome Luke and congrats on the two-year signing with Soudal Quickstep.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's nice to be back with you guys, and yeah, nice to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
It's amazing to have you here. Luke, first of all, when I've been looking over the results from the last couple of years, and especially representing an Italian brand, I've always been curious to hear about your, if there are any, Italian roots, because with Lampadi and your brother Gianni, what's the story here?
Yeah, I think we have Italian family on my dad's side quite a ways back, but yeah, I think our names just turned out really Italian. My brother's Gianni and I'm Luciano is my real name on my passport, actually. So I go by Luke, but yeah, definitely we have Italian roots in the family, but quite a ways back in the family. But for sure, yeah, originally from Italy.
Do you know what part of Italy?
Yeah, just outside Lucca.
Tuscany, nice.
Tuscany, so.
Beautiful place.
Yeah, very nice area.
It was where back in the 90s, all the Italian pro cyclists would stay.
Yeah, yeah. Many guys from the 90s were living there.
Yeah.
A lot of actually directors I've had that started in Italy were racing there and living there.
Cool. You're from Southern California, now based in Girona, Europe, the Mecca of cycling. But let's start the show by having you tell our listeners where you are from exactly and how you got into cycling.
Yeah. So I'm actually from Northern California, near San Francisco, about 1 hour north of San Francisco, Sonoma County, Sebastopol specifically for those who know the area. And yeah, it's really a nice spot to grow up as a kid, really good riding, all of that. But yeah, how I actually got into bicycles is I raced motocross when I was really young. That's what my dad did, was dirt bikes, and then kind of started training on a bicycle when I was 10, 11. And then, eventually just switched kind of. It kind of just happened. Me and my brother both were really into bicycles at the time and doing both. And then it came time to make a bit of a decision what we wanted to do. And yeah, we started racing bicycles from then on. And since then I've been kind of full gas on the bike.
That's why you always have so great technical skills on the bike.
Yeah, I think it plays a bit of a part to it. I mean, obviously it's a bit different, but of course I grew up on two wheels and you grow up at speed and doing that stuff, it helps you a lot with the bike for sure.
It does. Do you still ride your mountain bike once in a while?
Yeah, I still really enjoy riding the mountain bike. I raced a lot when I was younger on the mountain bike, and then my first year with Trinity when there was a bit less road after COVID year, I did a little bit on the mountain bike as well. And then, yeah, still I like to train on the mountain bike. I have a mountain bike in Girona, a mountain bike in California. So when I'm back home for off season, I ride a bit. And then during the season, I try to get in a few mountain bike rides when I can. So yeah, I really enjoy still being on the mountain bike.
Yeah, and that was cool. Also just to detach yourself from everyday life or the road, have really a bit of fun on the bike.
Yeah, it's just something a bit different. Mentally, it's refreshing as well, but you're still riding.
In Girona, do you also go and shred the trails with Nathan Haas once in a while, also coming with a background of mountain biking?
Yeah, actually, I have rode with him a few times. I don't know him super well, but yeah, I've seen him around Girona and met him here and there, but I haven't rode with him much.
Also because you both have different programs and yeah.
I think it's, yeah, there's a lot of guys in Girona, but yeah. For sure everyone is super busy, you know, everyone's at this race, that race.
Yeah.
He's doing different stuff. Like everybody has such a different schedule. You see people, but it's you're in and out all the time. So you never know who's actually there and who's not there.
Yeah. Have you been by the Castelli store there in Girona, the flagship store?
I have. Yeah. I've seen it since it went in. Actually, I've had my place there. And yeah, it's been really cool to see it kind of come to life there in Girona and become a popular spot.
Yeah, no, it's definitely popular. I'm actually hitting up there Friday after the few days here with the team.
Ah, very nice. It'd be nice to stop by now that I actually wear Castelli. It'd be nice to go in and say hi.
Oh yeah, you should. I mean, Luisa and Oscar are fantastic. The two guys we have there in the store can always bring by for a good Italian coffee whenever you want. So Luke, another thing is also which I'm really excited about is that it's great to have you back in Castelli. You know, you rode 2 years for Lux wearing Castelli. That was 2019 and 20.
Yeah,
I think
2019 and 2020 I was with Lux, and I wore Castelli then. So yeah, it's nice to be back.
Do you have a favorite aero suit, jersey, bib short, jacket, or accessory?
Yeah, I think one of the things that that I really missed that I'll get to wear again is the base layer. The merino wool base layer was one of those things in winter that you don't see it, and a lot of people don't see it when you ride because you have a jacket or a jersey on over, but it's one of my favorite pieces of clothing I've ever had, and I think to have that again will be really nice to wear. And it's not something that someone sees, so it's not always something you can be like, oh, check out my base layer, but yeah. It's really nice. So on the cold days, for sure, it's really, really good.
We'll get into this in a bit about your schedule for the season, but you're definitely going to need some of that warm weather gear or the fall weather gear, especially coming into the classics or pre-classics. It depends. I don't know if you already have a list of the spring races that you'll be doing.
Yeah, I have a bit of a schedule. I start in Mallorca, so you never know what you need there. It could either be a lot of rain or it could be pretty nice, but I start there and then either Bessèges or Oman, and then yeah, to the kind of the pre-classics. None of the big classics, but I do a lot of the pre-classics. I'll be at Kern on opening weekend, so start there. So yeah, for sure, we'll need a bit of the winter gear.
Yeah. With the current Brussel Current, wow, I still remember that. Yeah, that was the 2010 that we outfitted the whole Civilo test team in the GABA. First time the world really saw that all stealth black, short sleeve, almost waterproof jersey that those guys were wearing compared to the rest of the pack wearing big, heavy rain capes like parachutes and stuff. So let's rewind back a little. How did you then from Lux make the leap from US racing to European racing?
Yeah, so we spent quite a bit of time actually also in 2019 with the national team in Sittard, Netherlands. They have a kind of a hub of USA Cycling, and we did a lot of races that year with the junior national team in the Nations Cup. So Gent Wevelgem and Roubaix and all that stuff. And I think that's what kind of got me really into the European racing and a bit more noticed on the European scene. And then the next year, 2020, was COVID year, so there was no junior racing, and that was my last year junior. But in the middle of the year, I had started to talk with quite a few different under-23 teams, and I knew I wanted to make the jump to Europe. It was just kind of a matter of which team I thought was best, and I had the connection with Specialized also through Lux, and I had a good relationship with them, and Trinity also was already my agency before I went to the team, and so I had kind of those two connections with Trinity, and Trinity were trying to make a step up, so they were a bit less known of a team at the time, a bit more just known for Pidcock then, and then yeah I think they made the jump, they made quite a big jump up that next year, and I was really happy I joined the team then. So joined the team the beginning of 2021.
That was also when you moved, of course, then to Europe.
Yeah, so that year I spent most of my year in Europe, a little bit of time in Girona, quite a bit of time in Belgium, and then at the end of the year in about November I got an apartment in Girona, and since then I've been based in Girona during the season, and then just back to California for the off season.
And also Trinity, it must have been between brackets an easier transition to Europe because it's everyone speaks English on the team, it's an English team, but it's also a team that has fostered so many talented cyclists, some of them who also just like yourself made the leap to the world tour, like you mentioned Tom Pidcock, we have Ben Turner, Ben Healy. I mean, they're all graduated from the team.
Yeah, there's first off, it's a really good environment. I think it definitely is a lot easier being a British-based team. A lot of the staff speak English and everyone speaks English, so it's easier to integrate into the team. And then Yeah, as well as there's always the older guys to look up to that are turning pro, like you said, my first year. And they're on the team, Ben Turner and Ben Healy, Tom Glogue, were all guys who were on the team who now are pro, and I think you have those guys to look up to. And then a few years later, now I turn pro with the team, and there's younger guys, and it kind of is a, they have a really good program there for turning guys pro and doing it in a good environment. I think everyone there is really happy.
How was your first race in Europe, and how did it go?
My first race, I came over with USS Cycling when I was 15 to do Kermesse block when I was a Neulingen. So we did like six Kermesses in Belgium. And
summertime?
We did it in August. Yeah. Normally, I think in August.
And so good weather.
It was really good weather. But I can't remember my first race exactly. I think it was a Kermesse for sure in Belgium. I'm not sure which one, but I remember it just being really hectic. Like we showed up and there was 100 kids there, and it's just so much different than the US. Like there were so many kids and quite hectic. But then like we realized those were just like every day in Belgium. Like every day you could do a Kermesse or Saturday, Sunday, Wednesday. You could only race three times a week as a Neulingen. And yeah, every Saturday, Sunday, Wednesday, there would be four options and 150 kids at each one. But I think right from the start, we actually were quite successful on that block. I think we won three of the six races with the national team then. So I think we kind of hit the ground running, and our age group, I think we took confidence from that, and it kind of just built throughout our junior years. And we were able to have quite a successful junior career with the national team over in Europe, which helped all of us kind of move on to the U23 ranks and then turn pro.
Yeah. I remember also my first or second year at under 23. I also decided just to take a couple of months, because it ended up to be almost a year in Belgium, racing Kermesse and then racing some of the bigger races under 23 on the weekends. But just like you said, during the week, we had a training program, but we would just go and do the Kermesse races. And then you would look at your, back then was the SIM power meter, and you just do the TSS that you're supposed to do that day, or those power numbers, and you either just drop out when they were done or you would do it full on a race. But I remember, I think one time for me, I flatted in a morning crit in summertime or Kermesse, but you know, then in the afternoon there was another race, you're always like, you just like pulled out like, okay, I'm not even going to try to catch back on, I'm just going to go and do another race in the afternoon. So with your background as US crit champion, what do you prefer, crit racing or Kermesse racing?
I really enjoy both. I think I haven't done, we did a bit of Kermesses on Trinity. I've only done a few of the pro ones, but I really enjoy kind of the free style of racing that you get with Kermesse. And I think that's really nice. Like it's kind of just an open race where everyone feels like they can really race. It's not as controlled and it's not high stakes, and it's a bit for training, but it's still a serious race, which makes it a nice mix of fun, but really hard. Like they're some of the hardest races you can do, I think, because it's just full gas racing the whole time with no control, and you're attacking and going off the front. And then eventually normally a group of 15 guys go and that's the end. But, and then with crit racing, it's a lot, it's very tactical, which I really like the tactical side of all of it. Like really thinking about what's happening and knowing what to do, because everyone can go really hard for an hour. It's less, I think it comes down to less about the legs and a lot about how you play the race. And I really like that aspect of it, really thinking about the race. I've always enjoyed the tactical side. So to pick one is really hard. I think, now I probably do less US criterium. So I'd probably have to say that, because now I get less opportunity to do them. So I think when I can go back and do US crits, I think it's really nice opportunity to be able to.
Do you think it's easier to do crit race self-supported versus a Kermesse? I mean, you come in there with no team.
I think a lot of the Kermesses, actually a lot of guys go unsupported with no team. So I think you're in quite an even playing field. Whereas now in the US, there's quite a lot of crit teams. So I think when you show up without a team, you're at a bit of a disadvantage, but also you only have to play off yourself. So there's less going on, but for sure you're at a bit of a disadvantage now, because there's pretty good crit teams in the US. So I think you're racing against other teams, where at a Kermesse, a lot of guys just go for training. Like you said, they ride there and do it and ride home, or they're there for training. So you get a lot of guys who are really good, but on their own as well. So then you kind of, you're not a team, you're racing against each other, but there's a lot of other guys with the same goal who are riding for themselves. So I think that helps quite a bit. Whereas you don't have that as much anymore with US crit racing. Whereas in the past, a lot of guys were on their own. And then now it's all kind of the bigger US crit teams that are racing against each other.
Do you still see today at the Kermesse races? So I'm talking about my experience 20 years ago, where even on one of those days where you're out there and actually just riding the kermis for training, but you knew that if you were working for another team, because you were there just self-supported because it was just a training, you could still cash in some money if you would close some gaps, and you still had to do that effort anyway. Do you still see that this around the Belgium kermis races today?
Yeah, I think you still see it a bit. I think I think now a lot of it's more of like, oh, I'll help you out if... Rather than cashing in a bit of their prize money, I think you get a bit more like, oh, I help you out because you're a good friend, or we're training partners, but you're on a different team. So it's more of just like, oh, we'll do you a favor.
Yeah.
Rather than like, oh, we take a bit of your prize money and like there's a given agreement that you'll get a bit of it.
Yeah.
I think it's more of just doing a bit of a favor. But for sure, you see guys helping other guys, or two guys who train together all the time on different teams who race together a bit at a kermesse on the weekday.
But how would you describe the Belgian crack of death? Maybe you can also describe this to our listeners here, what it is.
Yeah, I think in a lot of Belgium they have concrete, so there's concrete squares instead of tarmac on the road, and yeah, you have the gap in between when it freezes and expands over time. Eventually you have a small gap, just a little bit wider than your tires, and yeah, if your tires go in there, you're kind of game over. But yeah, you don't want to get your wheels stuck in there, because it can be quite deep in different spots. And yeah, if you get stuck in there, all of a sudden your bike comes to a stop. So it's quite dangerous. But yeah, something everybody knows about when they're racing in Belgium.
I think that was one of the first things I was so scared about, ending up in that, you know, center crack there every time, or you just have to try to jump over. But I think you just get used to it. And you, of course, you come in with your big experience and technical skills. So that was one thing. And I think another lesson I learned after my first race was coming through one of the corners with 60 plus kilometers an hour. And I would just barely touch the brakes. And I would have this big dude behind me saying, you know, verdomme, 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 you know, like, why are you braking now, you know? And of course he was right. I mean, suddenly, you know, a small gap to open up, which I had to close after. So I think those two things were the two like hard lessons that I learned back like 20 years ago. And it's probably still the same today.
Yeah, you learn those ones the hard way for sure. You close gaps all day, and at the end, you don't have any legs. So you learn that lesson quick. Yeah, it's a quick one to learn.
So, Luke, how did everything fall into place getting a World Tour contract with Soudal Quickstep?
Yeah, so the last few years, I actually did a camp with the team at the end of 2021 after my first year under 23 with Trinity. So I had been on a camp and had a bit of conversation with the team. And then 2022, I had a okay season, like a lot of top fives. I was consistently always there, second, third, fourth, fifth, but never really won anything, never made that big step. And so I decided to do another year under 23, just this last year in 2023. And yeah, that third year really is what made the difference for me. And this last year I was able to start the season and get a win, and then kind of keep that momentum rolling. And at the beginning of the season, I had quite a few wins, and I think that really helped my conversation with quite a few teams. But yeah, for me, I really wanted to go to Quickstep. It's kind of a dream team for me to join Soudal Quickstep, and yeah, to have that opportunity and make it become a reality after a good start to the season. Then signing with the team was kind of the goal, and then to get there and sign with the team worked out. So yeah, it's really exciting.
The strongest and biggest classics team from the last two decades. So I assume also here, especially with the guys like Lampard, Schoenen, Philippe, Askren, and then, you know, all these guys, there are a lot here also you can learn, because you placed 10th at the junior Paris-Roubaix, if I'm right.
Mm-hmm.
So which classics do you hope to ride in your first years in the World Tour?
Yeah, my first years, probably do less of the big classics like Flanders and Roubaix, but eventually that would be the goal, is to ride some of those with the team. And for sure, yeah, it's... they have quite a long history in the classics, the team does, and a lot of good riders today still on the team who have done big things in the classics. I think to be teammates with those guys and learn from those guys slowly in the smaller races and then stepping up into the bigger races will be really nice over the next few years. So yeah, I think the history they have in developing young riders and sprinters and classics riders is really promising. And yeah, to be a part of that, hopefully, is what I look forward to.
Yeah, no, definitely. There's definitely much to learn. But also, you're learning from some of the best here in the game, but also that whole team spirit there's around. I mean, they call themselves the Wolfpack, but you definitely, I don't know if you also felt it these first days here with the team,
that you are together here in Calpe. It's definitely something that we as partners, that we always felt welcome more than just a sponsor of the team, but part of the team, but also you see them out there at races. That team spirit is something I think you need to look back to an under 23 or junior team to find.
I think the environment within the team and the riders and the staff and the partners and everyone is something that, it's really special. I think everyone's really, really close and really welcoming. Even these first days of camp, how welcoming everyone is, and you really feel a part of the family already. You know, like I've only been here a few days now, and you already feel really, really a part of the team.
Now that you're on a Belgian team, what's your preferred way to eat frites? Ketchup or mayo?
I'm a ketchup guy. Yeah, I always have. I've always been a ketchup guy, but actually a mix as well. Like sometimes go for both and then mix it a bit. But normally I'd say ketchup if I were to choose one.
What about then, fries or waffles? Sweet or the salty guy?
Yeah, I think I'm more of a fries guy than waffles, but I do love waffles as well. So it's a hard decision for me. That's a hard decision.
Well, let's go for the waffles then in the morning, like pancakes and then...
Waffles in the morning and then, yeah, definitely waffles over pancakes, but waffles in the morning and then fries later on for sure.
Nice. Okay, Luke, so we only got 15 minutes left. So I just want to pick your brain here on crit racing. Since we have one of the best in the game here. So crit racing takes place all over the country, in the States and in Europe as well. This means that all the courses, climates, and race conditions are different. In your opinion, where should we start to shape our perspective around upcoming events, and what are the key things that we should consider when thinking about participating in an upcoming crit race?
I think there's, in the US is really growing the crit racing scene, and there's a lot more hype around it every year, and it's growing. I think if you're going to look at, going to crit racing, I think your best experience is to go to Tulsa Tough first. Is like kind of the biggest one in the U.S. It's a full weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday of crit racing. And I think if you're going to go for one race, go to those 3 days, and I think you'll really see what it's about. You have a really good fan base there, really cool city and really good racing, and I think that's the best place to start if it were to be up to me. That's the heart of US crit racing, I would say. That's the one race I've only been able to do it one time, but it's been it was a really, really, really cool race. So I think if you're gonna start at one race, that's the one.
It's one big cycling party the whole weekend.
Basically, yeah, that's a lot of, I mean, crit racing is kind of just about the party, and then there happens to be a bike race on the side. Yeah. And they do a really good job of that.
As an amateur cyclist or someone who would like to get into crit racing, what are the key things that you need to look at? Maybe your skills before. Do you need to look at least, okay, what are your strengths and weaknesses? Are you better uphill? Are you better on the flat? Should you be looking at, also when you're looking at, like in the States where you got races all over the place, also the climate, that probably also depends. We talked about Belgium, racing in Belgium in spring is probably going to be very humid, wet, cold, as we know, versus summertime in August. How would someone who would have to will approach coming in or starting crit racing, what should they look at first?
Yeah, I think, you can first start with the local crits, but to maximize your strength, you have to see what courses are good for you. Obviously, like any race, there's going to be different courses for you. So just as in the Tour de France, there's climbing days, sprint days, time trial days, and crit racing, there's also days that are a bit hillier and a bit flatter. But I think anyone really still can win a crit. It's just you have to first look at how you can win a crit. If you're a guy who can win it off the front, if you're a guy who can win it in a sprint, kind of are your ways to win the race. And then if you're off the front, do you need to be in a small group or can you be solo? And I think if you look at it like that, then you can break it down a lot easier from the start. So if you can win it in the sprint, then how do you make it come down to a sprint or be in the group that goes to the line to win? And then if you need to be solo, figuring out what course or how you can do that. And I think that's where you kind of start with crit racing. There's a bit less variety, obviously. If you're just a pure climber, it's going to be hard to be more of a crit racer for sure. I mean, there is crits that have quite a bit of climbing, but they're far and few in between. It's less of what crit racing is. So, you have to really look at how you can win a crit before, if you're looking to win it. Like, you have to think about that before you start.
And then we also have the parkour or the course, because then you have the typical four-corner crit race that usually takes place in downtown. And then a more maybe technical, I don't know what you call it, eight-corner crit.
Yeah.
We got a little bit of everything.
Yeah, there's definitely also variants in the parkour. So you can have a really simple crit that's just four corners and a lot less to think about, just really fast. And then you can also have very technical crits in different areas with a lot of corners and tight roads and
maybe different pavement surface.
Yeah, different pavement and stuff like that. So you can have a big difference there, which obviously if it's a lot more technical than it, if you're better technically or more punchy, then it can favor you a bit more than a guy who can just roll around four corners and have a good sprint. So there's that difference as well, for sure.
Yeah, that's probably more those races with the eight corner crit, or how you call them, lots with some of uphill, downhills, corners, you know, changes in pavement. Those are probably the more difficult technically, as you said, but also to be able to control as a team. Isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's actually with a lot more corners, it's a bit easier to control it as a team. At the end of the day, for an hour, you can only ride so fast. So if you have enough guys on the front, a team can only ride 60 Ks an hour. You can only do it so long. So right. If you have guys chopping off on the front, you can kind of control that as well as with the corners. If you have a team on the front, only so many guys can pass you in 50 meters, 75 meters in between the corners, 100 meters. So if you don't have long straightaways, it's harder for guys to pass. So by the time someone attacks and gets around six guys, they already can only get a 2 second gap and then you can bring it back. So I think when there's a lot of corners, it can actually be a bit easier to control than if there's just four corners, because then it's a bit more of a drag race, if that makes sense. So yeah, it depends on the team and the strength of the team. But I think if it's technical, it can be almost easier to control if you have a strong team.
What is your favorite race course?
For sure, my favorite course is in Knoxville, where I've won all three of my national championships. But yeah, I always say one day I'm going to have put on my own crit there. Now that Nationals isn't there anymore, I want to put on a crit in Knoxville on the same course. But I think more technical. I think for me, I like quite a technical crit. Just, yeah, it's always kind of what I've enjoyed, and it makes it a bit more interesting than four corners can be on the boring side of things.
Yeah.
So the more technical, it makes it a bit more interesting and more going on and more to think about during the race and can bring in more tactics and all of that. So I quite enjoy a bit more technical.
Yeah. But also I think for crit racing, I assume it's similar to track racing. First thing first is that you need to develop this level of comfort, being in the big pack, touching each other's handlebars or knuckles when you're in the field, touching shoulder, you know, being this little stressful or uncomfortable situation for a lot of cyclists.
Yeah, I think once you develop kind of being comfortable in the field and trusting the guys around you, then you're off to a good start for sure.
Yeah.
And you have to have that comfort before you'll be able to really survive in the races, because if you can't be comfortable in the group, then you're either in the wind the whole time or wasting energy. So yeah. Like any race, I mean, same within Europe, you have to be comfortable in the middle of the group to get some draft and trust the guys around you.
Because I remember sometimes, of course, I raced on a lower level than you, but I remember some guys there gripping the handlebars to death, you know, throughout the race. And you could just see the muscles were fully activated, you know, the tricep, the biceps. That's not the most, that was the best way to ride a criterium.
Yeah, no, it's not the most efficient. Luckily, they're an hour, so you can be a bit more tense than in a five-hour race, but for sure, you have to be relaxed in any racing to be able to think straight, keep your heart rate down and all of that.
Also, I think the only time that you need to be all activated is when you go for the max sprint.
Yeah,
the
exactly.
End, so.
Yeah, then everything.
How do you think people, they can practice a level of comfort? Talking about amateurs and just people just getting into crit racing here, is that joining group rides, finding buddies that you can always ride together and build up that confidence over time?
Yeah, I think the easiest answer is to race a lot. The more you race, the more you'll get comfortable with it. But obviously you can't race all the time. So if you have a local group ride, then yeah, that's a good way to do it. When you're training with more people and riding next to someone all the time, you get more comfortable riding close to someone if you're training next to them every day. And those are the best ways, is just doing it really. There's no at home practice on your own with it. You just kind of have to do it to learn it.
So how would your training program look like preparing for a crit race? I mean, you know what you have to do, you know the recipe, you know, developing a high max power, fast sprints. How would the training program look like?
Yeah, I'd say I've never trained specifically for crits. I've always trained for the road, because that's what I've been focused on, is obviously becoming a pro on the road. So I've always done kind of the road racing side and then jumped into the crits. I think you still have to do hours to train for crits. It's not like you can ride 10 hours a week and be a really competitive crit racer. You still have to train the hours and do just as much. Maybe you can get away with a bit less, but you still have to train if you want to be at the top level of crit racing, and the guys who are doing quite a bit of hours. So I think you train very similar to how we train on the road. You can get away with a bit less and a bit more efforts. So a bit less hours, a bit more efforts maybe. But yeah, you have to do quite a bit of high intensity. And then also it's being good at the right time. The season is a lot shorter and everything is kind of packed into like May, June, July, August instead of February to September. So it's really being good when it counts. I think not being really good in January, but making sure you're really good in that time, May, June, July, that time of year.
Sometimes on a training ride, they will always force us to accelerate out of the corner zone, just on normal training ride, just to get that routine in, into the legs and high cadence. I mean, of course, you look at me, I'm not really, I was never built for crit racing. I was just there, just using more as a training, but they offered kermesse, but it was definitely good training there. But also when you go into a breakaway, or when you're in a breakaway, you might end up with the guy who has an FTP of 420, and you also have another one maybe with 300. You know your competitors, you know what the strengths and weaknesses are. This is a breakaway of 3-4 people. Keep this breakaway up front. You also need to be able to have the whole team or the whole group work together. How can you encourage some of the riders, especially the one with the lower FTP?
Yeah, I mean, your breakaway is only ever going to be as good as the weakest guy, so you can only go as fast as he can go, you know, if you want to keep him in the break. So I think you have to, everybody has to ride a bit to that person's level, and then the other guy's just going to save a bit more and he can pull a bit longer, but he's not going to be able to go much faster because then you're just going to leave the other guys behind. So you have to ride efficient and ride kind of to the weakest guy in the break if you want to make it work all day. But in crit racing, it's a bit more full gas in the breakaways. And if you get dropped out of the break, you get dropped out of the break. You're not doing 180Ks, 200Ks with these guys. So you can afford to have a bit less guys and just go full gas.
Full gas, yeah. We'll do another episode on aerodynamics and the importance of the aerodynamics, since 75% of the aerodynamic drag is coming from the rider, the cyclist, and the rest from the bike and the rest of the equipment, the wheels. But I know also that you like to ride, you have done it the last few seasons, 28 mil tires for crit racing, tubeless, I assume, or?
Yeah.
Is there a reason for the 28? Have you tried to go up and down?
I like a wider tire, kind of always have. I've always enjoyed a 28, and then I train on a 30 or 32. But yeah, I've always just kind of enjoyed the 28s and the feel of a 28. And then, yeah, I think things are proving that it's a bit faster.
Better grip, traction.
Yeah, a bit better traction. And I think a lot of it's just that feeling. Like with crit racing, you can do a lot of testing, but if it feels good and you're comfortable, that helps with the being relaxed and all of that. Whereas if not every corner, if you try to ride 25s, you might be stressed in every corner and thinking about it. And then that can also be maybe more wear and tear on you than if you're just comfortable on the 28. And I think just what feels good can sometimes be better than what tests good, if that makes sense in crit racing.
What would your tire pressure usually be?
Normally in PSI, I'd run about 70 PSI, front and rear, normally for crits.
Yeah. And for cobbles? And wet days?
Yeah, I mean, wet days, we can go down to 50, 45, 50, somewhere around there, PSI for cobbles, wet days. And you can run lower and lower all the time now with tubeless, so it's only getting lower.
Lower, yeah.
Yeah.
Last thing, one of the big questions that I always get based around is nutrition. How does your nutrition usually looks like on a race day, before a race, or directly after the race?
Yeah, for me, I think the morning of the race, having a nice breakfast. Normally, I'm not too picky of an eater. I'll kind of have whatever the team has the morning of a race, whether that's rice and eggs, or sometimes oatmeal or porridge is also good. I'm happy with oats as well. So yeah, I'm just about kind of getting enough the morning of the race, and then making sure you have a good coffee before the race, which isn't always possible, but if you have a good coffee, then it's a good day. And and then after the race, normally the team has a meal there, of whether it's pasta or some sort of rice. You normally have something with some carbs in it for after the race. So that's kind of the go-to.
Do you usually go to the gym all season, or just in the off season?
Normally just the off season, and then try to maintain a bit throughout the year, but I don't do a whole lot of gym personally, actually. Normally just mostly in the off season.
Luke, it's been amazing to have you on. There's been some action-packed 40 minutes of content here. It was great to get to know you. Unfortunately, I have a few more questions, but time is running out if you need to go downstairs.
We'll be back for another episode for sure.
Exactly. Sounds good.
Thank you guys for having me on. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Thank you, Luke. And good luck for the season.
Thank you.